Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Guitar, an amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar.
Yeah.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. We have a very interesting show for you tonight. Returning to the show is my very great friend and special guest, Stephen Day. Stephen, welcome to the show. It's great to have you back again.
It's good to be back, Jeff.
Now, A couple of months ago, Stephen had called me and he had told me about this new album that he was doing that was coming out, and hence the show. It's called One Heart Highway, and I'm going to show you a picture. Here's the album. It's available now, right?
It is
available now. And it's a very interesting album, and I want to talk a little bit about the creation of it, the concept behind it, and then we're going to get a little more into the musical content and stuff, because everything in this album is significant, so bear that in mind as you listen to the clips that we're going to play. But anyway, let's start from the beginning. What was the incentive behind this and doing this album?
You know, I've been playing Indian classical music for about 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also a composer, as you know, Jeff. We've been on the show talking about my compositions and my songs.
Mm-hmm.
But up till this point, I had never made an album of just pure Indian classical music. I've done a lot of mixed, you know, fusion. I've played Indian classical music on albums, other people's albums. I've fused it in with my songs. It's on, you know, TV shows like Mad Men, and it's on the Discovery Channel. But I had never taken the time to really focus on what it takes to actually record traditional Indian classical music in the form of ragas. That's the name of the pieces of music, ragas. So I thought it was high time to do it. And that's the significance of this album. It also includes a music and meditation, vocal exercise, journey, I call it.
Mm-hmm.
And it just felt like it was time in my life also. I've been going in this direction. It's just time to purify, time to get down to the basics, the essentials. I also feel like, you know, if I'm playing the sarod and representing it live, which I've done for years, I've played these traditional ragas in performances and concerts for years. It's just never had done an official recording. So,
now, everything, we had talked a little bit about this in the last time we were on the show, about how significant everything is. And if you can, in a nutshell, I know this is a very broad statement.
It's a big nutshell.
How do you describe the characteristic of this type of music? How would you, to a person that's not familiar with it, how would you describe? So, like for example, I'm talking about session players. How would they look at this? You know, how would you play Indian music?
Yeah, I know your audience is very sophisticated musically, so I'll speak a little bit about the actual music. If you're guitar players out there, you'd think of open tuning. So, because once you open the tuning, in general, because once you have the drone and you're playing off of a drone as a kind of, you know, dominant tone that you're working with, then it changes your mood, changes the way you play. It actually opens up your heart in a way that gives you a certain type of freedom to play from within. And improvise, that's really the key. Because you have that kind of openness of heart, you begin to improvise. And you know how it works with improvisation. There's this place you can go where you really can't play a wrong note. You're playing what you're playing, and even if it's a mistake, you know, maybe you go outside the rog or something somehow by mistake, you bring it back in and it all flows, and it's something that becomes a happy accident. And it's just a place which is it's a very spiritual kind of lifestyle that goes with this as well, mm-hmm. where your music is actually, this kind of music is an extension of the lifestyle that you live. And I think that's really why I chose to do this album with ragas, is that I have been going within myself to kind of purify my thoughts, my attention, and my heart. And through that process, I'm pouring myself into the music that really reflects that kind of desire to go within yourself, to become more, you know, essential, to become more authentic, real, watch what you say, mean what you say, and those kinds of things. It doesn't come from like a brain trick, you know. You can't sort of force yourself to like be authentic. Yeah. I mean, I know there are things like gratitude exercises, and that really works. Like gratitude exercises are great. I'm grateful for my breath. I'm grateful for the food on my table. These kinds of things can help bring you within yourself and live a purer life, live a better life. So you mean what you say, and you say what you mean. And for music, of course, that's the most important thing, mm-hmm. that your notes are authentic, that they're ringing true. In India, my teacher, Amjad Ali Khan, one of the sayings that he always says is Swar Hi Ishwar, which means the note, the sound itself, is the path to God, is the divine. Mm-hmm. So that is it. Searching for that note as a form of perfection, and divinity is the actual, it really is the spiritual search for the musician. So, I mean, there are sadhu, and they walk up to the Himalayas, and this is a different form of seeking God. There are people who, you know, there's all kinds of forms of seeking the divine, but this is a musician show, right? I mean, we've got a lot of musician listeners. The musician, like, path for seeking is connected to this way, because you know, get that drone tone going, guys, and then start opening up the neck, and then you find your flow is a little bit different, and it goes from there.
So the structure, the ragas are based on the improvisation's a very important part of it.
Yeah.
It's not like Western music where it's traditionally, you know, like classical music's written out. It's the same thing. And then also too, describe to me a little bit of the structure. Now, I don't know if I got it right. I was looking at the way when I was going through to pull some clips, and we'll play some in a minute.
Yeah.
Noticed it seemed to me the ragas were ABC, three parts, three main sections. Mm-hmm. Is that standard, or is there more sections, or does it?
It depends. It's pretty standard, but there's actually a B, C, D. You think Stairway to Heaven. There's the section at the beginning of Stairway to Heaven where it's just instrumental, no drums, and a flute, right? Mm-hmm. That's like the beginning of the raga. It's called Alap. And then the band kicks in, and we have a kind of a pace or a rhythm or a tempo, which is what's called sing-along. It's a song-like tempo. It's not too fast, but not too slow. It's like walking. And then there's a third section, and then a fourth section, which is really fast, almost as fast as you can go. So, and at the end of Stairway to Heaven, of course, it's just, you know, pushing the pace with electric guitar and everything else. So a raga is very similar. It starts, again, without rhythm, no tabla, no accompaniment instrument, alap. And then it goes to, it states the melody of the raga. And then it increases to a third or a secondary theme, you could say. And then it finishes with what's called jala. And jala is very rhythmic, extremely rhythmic. You're bouncing your hand, your right hand from your top string and playing your melodies down here. Thank you. getting faster. Till the end, where it just...
Part number two, there's rhythm, there's tablas, and there's stuff going on at this, which you'll hear in some of the sections I'm going to play. But let me ask you this. The four sections that you're just talking about,
yeah,
what's the there's a spiritual significance to that too, isn't it? Is it like a form of a prayer?
Well, yeah, the numbers always seem to work out well, and very important in Indian music as well. There are 16-beat cycles, which is 4 and 4. And then if you repeat them a certain way, the tabla player is improvising, the instrumentalist is improvising, and you come together in what is called a T-high, which is 3. So there was that's significant, too. And this is all connected to the chakras. There are 3 channels. Mm-hmm. And if you want, I could show that.
You know, well, I want you to go. The chakras are a key part of the meditation,
yes,
journey, which we'll do in a second.
Okay.
But what I want to ask you is, so that progression... Mm. From A, B, C to D of the music.
Yeah.
Does that mimic the progression of life or progression of a spiritual development? Is there a religious significance?
Yeah, there's four petals of what's called the Muladhara Chakra. And there are 4 petals in the Muladhara. And in a moment when we show this chart that shows the chakras, you'll see that. So the number 4 is very significant as a foundation chakra. It's the Ganesha principle, it's called. Mm-hmm. And without the Ganesha principle... you know, if the Ganesha principle's off, then the rhythm doesn't really get into its groove, so to speak. So the principle of the 4 is very, very important. And it's no accident that so much music is in 4-4 time.
Yeah. Okay, hold on. All right, I'm taking notes here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go ahead and play a clip, Rag
Kirvani.
Kirvani.
Yeah.
And I'm playing a clip. This is from the second section. So you're going to hear the tempo.
Mm-hmm.
And it's reiterating the main theme, but you're improvising it already on that point.
Yeah.
Right?
Reiterating the main theme is a big part of it. It's kind of like jazz, the headline. Headline.
Okay. So here it is, the Kirvani. If you want to grab a set of headphones, you can hear it.
Yes.
Here's the clip. Now, in that section, I hear when the tabla came in, it was kind of subtle and simple. And as the section... Now, let me mention one thing. each of these pieces are long. So this one here is the total length of the piece is 23 minutes. So I'm just pulling like a 2-minute clip. So it's like just a pinhole view of what he's doing. But it started, you can hear in the clip that he's starting out very simple on the tabla, but then it gets more complicated as you evolve,
right,
as you're moving or as you're playing. And I assume it's just the two of you, right?
Yeah, just the
there's two no ones. Other instruments, just you two.
No.
The I'm trying to get into your head a little bit here on the improvisation. So at that point, you've already stated the theme in the A section.
Yeah.
So in this section, where are you going with the melody?
Yeah, this is what I'd call this, to be technical, the B section. The A section is, the theme is not so well stated, actually. It's just you're going through the notes of the octave and the scale and moving up one by one and kind of darting in and out around it and then coming back to the main note. So you're really exploring the notes of the raga scale, if you were. And it can be different going up as it is down. So it's like a little Indian lane, you know, as opposed to a highway. It's a lot more intricate to get around, and you can get lost if you don't, you know, really easy. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So the B section was where that theme is, and once you've built the theme, then we improvise, and you come back to the theme. The improvisations are sometimes long, sometimes short, and they often are ended with that three-part, what I call T-high, which you heard, you know, in this clip that was played, there was the, you know, the T-high ended all the improvisations, actually.
Can you play that?
Yeah, sure, I can play a T-high. I'll do it on a different raga, I guess, so it's just easier. Theme. Second time. So like that.
Okay, so you go back to something to finish the statement.
So yeah, finish the statements with a phrasing of three. So when it went, that was three. Dum-ba-dum, bum-ba-bum, bum-ba-bum, three times. And then when it did another T-high, which is this particular one, dum-dum-da-dum, one dum-dum-da-dum, two da-da-da-da, and then back to the theme.
What's the significance of the three?
Three is a magic number. Three is very, you'll see three in a lot of mystical writing. You'll see the reference to three in the triangle, the golden triangle, the triangle in general. Mm-hmm. It's also in relationship when you have a support of three people. In a family, for instance, it has a particular dynamic. Groups of three, when you're working with coworkers or you're in a radio interview and you have three people, there's a whole other dynamic than there is with four or two. So it's also in complement to the 4-4 time or the 16-beat cycles. And so three and four have a particular significance. They add to seven. There are seven chakras. And there are three channels in the subtle system, which we'll see in a moment, the left channel, the right channel, and the center channel. So there's a link to a lot of basic mystical, but also very basic, even physical aspects of our bodies and movements and moods and ways we do things.
One other question before we go on to some, which we'll talk about the chakras, and we're going to talk about the meditation journey.
Mm.
When you're improvising, what key was this in?
This is tuned to C right now. And the piece, you know, I'm playing in this. This is a 5-note raga I'm playing now.
Kirvani was in
Kirvani has seven notes. And that was C as well. This just happens to be the way I tune my sarod.
No, okay. But now, in your improvisation, are there rules how far you can go out and against harmonically?
Absolutely. It's different than jazz. And this is a very important point. I'm glad you brought it up. Whereas in jazz, you know, not anything goes, but there's all kinds of modern jazz, which goes all over the place in terms of scale and rhythm and everything else. Whereas in ragas, these traditional ragas, once you set your scale, you stated, you know, basically your playing field, then you stay within the playing field. And you pretty much stay within that note structure. So for the Kirvani, those seven notes are the ones that I improvise with. For this piece here, there's five notes, and for the most part, stay within that structure.
So what are the seven notes of the Kirvani?
Kirvani is
okay. So dissonance isn't allowed. I mean, playing against harmony, like in jazz, a lot of or even 20th century music, where you actually the dissonance is desirable.
Right.
Which
well,
would
you're
make
talking
sense
harmony.
If you're talking. Yeah.
Harmony is a bit different. See, that's another characteristic of Indian music is it's not really about harmony so much, not stacking notes. Your solo note, you know, reaching that note. If anything, it would be just in terms of the harmony with the drone.
Yeah.
And no, we're not thinking about. You know, disharmony, but so to speak. But you know, musicians like myself experiment with some harmonic principles, and we'll do stuff like.
Oh, you'll actually play two notes. That's not traditional, though.
No, it's really hard because you've got it. You're a fretless instrument, and to keep it like in tune, it's not easy. And to move it. But no, it's not traditional at all, and it's part of the culture, it's part of the way the music evolved, and it's part of that emphasis again on that.
Yeah.
That slide, the one note, the going within oneself as opposed to getting a team of notes and stacking them and creating an incredible sort of orchestral piece that is impressive in its own way. But all of that is somewhat, to some extent, an outer process, whereas this is extremely inward. It's really all about the journey, not so much the destination.
Somebody have is your speaker on the laptop? I'm hearing some audio. There's something on.
It could be the.
No, I don't. I'm not on. I'm hearing something coming out of one of the something's leaking.
Yeah,
check the iPhone at the volume on the iPhone. Anyway, let's go on to the meditation piece.
Sure.
And I want to talk a little bit now. This is totally different. The structure of this is different because now the clip I'm going to play in a minute will be part of the instrumental era. But the first part is he's playing some. You play some pieces and you can explain it some more detail and then. There's a chant or a note that you sing for each of the chakras, right?
Yes, that's right.
So what is that? Explain the purpose of, because there's a function in that, obviously, to bring you to a certain place spiritually.
Mm.
So let me let you explain this. It's
sure.
called Music and Meditation Journey the clip.
Music and Meditation. Can I take my headphones off? Take headphones off for a moment. The Music and Meditation Journey goes through the seven notes of the chakras, and for those of you who are into yoga and meditation, you're familiar with these seven chakras, energy centers in the body, and they you don't see these, you don't operate them on them with a scalpel. They're subtle and very much like the sympathetic strings of an instrument like this. They are tuned, and when you tune them, they ring and create a greater sound. And once that happens, then your life vibrates. We say vibrations flow, and your life vibrates at a higher frequency. And I'll show you that in a minute with the sarod. But in the subtle system of the inner body, this is the four-petaled muladhara chakra. And we talked about that a little bit. That's the basis. And there are three channels. Note, because we were talking about numbers. So three channels. The center channel here is, in a way, the most important. The spiritual path up through the center to the seventh chakra. This is the Sahasrara chakra on top of your head. When it opens, then one is receiving the messages, the divine intuition. Musicians and artists are very, very much akin and familiar with this because they depend upon it for their livelihood, actually. You need to write a song? Well, where do you go? You need to open up to that to that inspiration. And it drops in. It drops in at unexpected moments. A lot of musicians, I know I have, you have a pen and paper or something right by your bed or wherever you go, right? Or you're nowadays it's the iPhone recorder, right? Because it's like, I got an idea. Oh, boom, got to get that idea down. It doesn't come out the same way twice. And that, when you, this is a great way, guys out there, you know, to increase your sensitivity to those kind of messages. Is increased when the seventh chakra is open. And meditation, which is what this piece is all about, a music and meditation journey, will help open this chakra, the seventh chakra, bring the kundalini energy. This kundalini is down here. I'm bending around. Right here on the base of your spine is the kundalini, 3.5 coils. When it opens up and comes up through your center channel, through your Agnya chakra, beyond your thought processes, and connects with your seventh chakra, Sahasrara, then you feel the energy, you feel the vibration, and you play from another place. You're the energy of that which is beyond can come in.
Now, I want you to go, we'll go through the chakras and explain it, but I noticed that on this diagram, obviously seven is the top chakra, but also it's in the hands. How is that?
Oh, you feel the vibrations as well. This process, it's called Sahaja Yoga. And we're getting into the nitty-gritty of this. Sahaja Yoga was started in 1970 by a woman named Sri Mataji. And I will just show a photo of her because her significance of her life is tremendous in the history of spirituality. She, in 1970, opened or found a way to open this Sahasrara chakra and then have people feel this en masse. So not just one person at a time, but in groups of 10, 20, 100, thousands. And then went on throughout her life to give programs in which she gave this experience, opened people up to this experience that so they could have this and feel this vibration in concert halls and rooms and all over the world. And I traveled with Sri Mataji and played the sarod before her talks and programs. And she, in fact, gave me advice as to, you know, what kind of music career path to take and introduced me to my wonderful music inspiration in sarod, Amjad Ali Khan. So there's a story in my life that was intertwined with the opening of these this consciousness in humanity by Sri Mataji and her work. And so when I decided to do the music and meditation journey, it was a no-brainer. I just had to do it because it's so much been a part of what I've done and how I've learned, because I came to Indian music through the meditation. I was 21, and I hadn't really heard Indian music before except for maybe in a Beatles album. So I started to meditate. I learned about the seventh chakra, and then I went to a Ravi Shankar concert. And then 6 months later, I went to India. And then I was blown away by the music. There's guys getting up on stage at 2 a.m., no drugs, no alcohol, and they played till 6 a.m., and it was unbelievable, like a hurricane of love and activity and incredible music. And I was like, wow, that's dynamism. You know, so for 10 years I spent, you know, listening to the music, playing tablas, learning some sitar, dabbling a little bit, as you can only do really in the West. And then I got my break, and I was asked to go do an album at a school in India that Sri Mataji started, called the P.K. Salve Academy of Fine Arts, and it's in the name of her father. So I wrote an album of fusion songs. I learned the sarod, and then the next year I went to Delhi and learned, got a scholarship to study with Ustad Amjad Ali Khan. And, you know, the rest is history. But it's the music meditation exercise is note by note connected to your own chakra system. So you actually play the note and then sing that note, and then your chakra opens up. So the seven chakras open up one by one, and then we go all the way to the top with Ni. And that's a Sahasrara, which opens. Ni is short for Nirmala, or pure. To your home.
Now, so in this piece, you have seven steps. You have seven notes with seven sung parts.
Yeah.
So those, in one way, you're setting up the scale.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And then each note is significant to open up the chakra.
Yes, exactly.
To prepare you for the rest of the piece.
Exactly. Yeah, because I actually do an improvisation in this first piece on the album. I actually just go up the basic scale, you know, just the white notes on the piano. So
that's the seven notes.
Yeah.
And then go ahead and play the notes and tell us, because in the piece you'd say what they're named.
Right. So first is sa. And we usually sing them out, sa. And then re. Taking a deep breath first. Re. And then up to ga. Deep breath. You want to do it with me? You can. Ga. And then to the heart. You put your hand on your heart, actually. You put your right hand on your heart. This is where your spirit resides and your desire. Your desire to connect as an individual conscious person is manifested through your pure desire to connect to the whole right here. Collective is up here. And so we're going to sing. We want sa re ga ma. So ma being the mother, we're going to sing from our hearts the fourth note of the scale. So get ready to take a deep breath. Fifth note, the chakra of the Vishuddhi chakra, and this is pa. Take a deep breath. Pa. Sixth note, your forehead, we forgive here. We put our hands on our foreheads and say, I forgive. And then sing da. Deep breath. Da. And then the seventh chakra, the most in the destination, is we put the top of the palm of our hands on top of our heads. And just go ahead and you do this with me if you can. Just circle, massage seven times slowly. It opens up this chakra with pure desire, the desire to be one with all that is created. And then we'll sing a ni together. And as we do, you can just take the palm of your hand above your head and you'll feel sensations on the palm of your hand and your fingertips. Jeff asked me about the numbers and the hand, and these are all chakras. And they come alive, and your awareness comes alive. You become your own master. You become your own guru. You can decode what's happening within your body. It's a fantastic thing. The kundalini comes up spontaneously. It's called sahaja. Let's sing the note, because that powerful music vocalization increases the energy, the vibration. And we'll do that now. So take a deep breath. We're going to sing ni. Ni. And then we end with sa. So and of course on the music and meditation journey we do it three times. We'll do it again. Take a deep breath. Ni. And then try again. You feel it. You try your left hand. feel the energy, feel the vibration. And of course, the more we do this, the more you try this, the more you listen to the album, and I'm not trying to sell it, but the more you can get into this vibe, the more your chakras open, and then the more your playing can, you know, really explode from the point of view of improvisation, because you're playing fully from your heart. And as we talked about authentic sound. Mm-hmm. When you're in this meditative state, then it's surrender, and it flows through you. And it's what, you know, musicians aim for, right? When you're just in the groove, in together as a band, you're just in the zone, whatever way you want to call it. But it's that place which we strive for. But it's 100% natural. It's 100% free. Sahaja Yoga is free. And, you know, you can practice it online. You can go to local centers. I think we'll probably provide some links, I think, right?
Yeah. Now, so you do this, and we go through all of the different tones. So you establish the tones, and that's kind of part of the beginning of the meditation. So everybody's opening up the chakras. Now, what happens next in the piece? Now, I'm going to play a clip in a little bit, in a moment, and it's after this. I forget which part of the section, because this is a 10 and a half minutes. But what are you doing musically at that point after that? So where are you taking us?
Yeah, that's a really good point, because it's one thing to meditate and we reach the silence. But then, you know, how long can we extend the silence? How long can we sustain it? And the beauty of music, especially this divine music, this kind of instrument, which was created for this purpose, these instruments are made for this, is that it can extend that state out, and your meditation can increase. And then the ambience of your house, for instance, when you play this music, can increase in vibration. So it's like lighting a candle or incense. It starts to bring the ambience, and it spreads, and it goes wide and far. And it's a way of kind of continuing that meditated vibe for longer periods of time. And what I'm doing in this case is I'm just improvising on the notes. And that goes on, I think, for 10 minutes or something. No.
So basically the piece is a 2AB. So you have the establishment of the notes and the kind of the chant, and then it's an improvisation after that.
Yeah, this is a bit different. The form is different. It's really just the note of each center or chakra, and then the meditation through that, and then just an improvised piece, which doesn't have a rhythmic instrument. There's no tabla in this piece. So that would be what the A is in the other sections. In the other two ragas, the A section has no tabla, and it's just pure improvisation, actually, in its purest form. You're emoting to the ultimate degree, because there's nothing holding you back. And in fact, you can hold the notes as long as you feel, you know. And that is the ultimate in the ultimate of your inner expression, the alap. And so that's what I'm doing on there. And improvisation really becomes natural and spontaneous as well.
Okay, let me play the part of this, the clip that I have, and take a listen. And I have some other questions for you about this. So this is Music and Meditation Journey. Thank you. That was in the key of C?
Yeah.
Now, besides the fact that, well, you tune your instrument in C, is the key of C significant as opposed to tuning to the key of D? Or?
Well, the Sirode, each instrument has a kind of home base where it feels best, and the Sirode works for B and C. And it just, if I tune it to D, you know, strings can break and this.
Okay, but I mean, the difference between B and C.
Yeah.
Is there a spiritual significance?
Well, every note's linked to the chakras as well, so there's that. But I've always kind of gravitated towards C because I play with other people, and C is a good common ground for you know, other instrumentalists, and I've played with orchestras and, you know, and composed for orchestra and that kind of thing. So, you know, really C is a good place to be. But the notes, you know, as the meditation journey goes, are connected to the chakras. So you've got your Sa is your base chakra. Re is the Swadhisthana or second chakra. Mi is the Nabhi. And this is your heart. Vishuddhi, your throat. Forehead. Ni. B. B is a Sahasrara, and then back to C. So there's a significance in the vibration and the chakras as they relate to the notes as well.
So at the after this second part where you were playing here and improvising, it's just straight improvising, straight out on that.
Yeah, I think it was a one take, Charlie. You know, I just went for it. Yeah, I believe it was. I might have done some other takes actually. I can't remember, but I just know. You see, the thing is, if you're in meditation, you go deep enough into it, then, and of course you have to have the skills, you know, but then you surrender to what comes. You surrender, literally. It's a feeling. I think the takes take on a different meaning. It's not so much that you're doing takes to see which one would be the best. You're getting takes going to warm up, to get into the vibration, to get into the feeling, to get fully immersed into this kind of ocean of improvisation. And you get to a point where you're just really in the zone, in the place, in meditation.
Right.
And then you just go, and it works.
Now, the ragas, I presume those two were done in, it's a one complete take. There's no sections. But this one, did you do the voice thing as a separate piece and then went to the improv? Did you do the whole thing?
I did the whole thing. Of course, I did. With voice, it's a bit of a different story. And so I did do the voice. I did everything, and then I played. And I really didn't edit much. But with voice, I did do some retakes and edits and stuff. Because, you know, my instrument is a Sirode. And I wanted to just kind of get it right, and we did a few things with that. A little bit of editing in general, but mostly just taking stuff out. We didn't fiddle around with second. We didn't take two tracks and blend them at all. There was none of that. You find the track. You find like, the Malcolms is a good example. It's like, you know, 37 minutes long. We stopped at the Alap. So the Alap, I think, was 9 or 10 minutes. But once we got the tuba player in there, it was that was it. It was like 9 minutes to 37 minutes. You do the math. It was like, what, 28 minutes straight.
So you did the first part by yourself solo.
Yeah.
Then you brought him in.
Yeah.
So let me ask you a little bit, too, on how you mic this thing. How did you mic the instrument? Is this close to what you were doing?
You know, it goes right down here. This is the place where it resonates the best right there. So we bring the one mic there, and then we had an overhead.
Overhead.
Yeah. And
then when you had the tabla player in, what did you do?
Yeah, he had two mics as well over top of his instrument. And then, you know, we faced each other. And then just, you know, once he comes in, then I'm playing over and over. I'm really giving him a chance to come in and do his stuff by just playing the theme over and over again. So he can come in and do a little bit of a solo. And then we both know that we're going to start, you know, the theme piece, and then I'm going to start to solo or improvise, and then he's going to play off of that, and he senses when I'm going to do the ending part, and he hits it, you know, the three part T high that's called ending, so he plays off of that, and then you know, we try to inspire each other by, you know, kind of as the tempo increases in this song, like Stairway to Heaven increases, then of course, you know, things intensify naturally. and the music gets more exciting in some sense. And then we go to the third part, the C part, where I change the, there's a little break there, but we're still in, we're not taking any break in terms of.
You didn't stop recording.
No, we didn't stop recording. Not once we went on there. And then we do the third, the different melody, which is called Drutgat, but and then the Jala, which is sort of the build up to the very end. And, you know, we knew which take it was. We knew it. And if you heard, like, our outtakes, everybody knew it. You know, the engineer knew it. Everybody knew that was the one. It was like, you know, that was it. And then we just had to kind of, we had the raw material to then take to, you know, to the editing board and do, you know, shape it a little bit. But there was nothing like I said, there was nothing like trying to piece things together. None of that.
Yeah, not a lot of cutting
of
pieces.
No, no.
But let me ask you this now. So that was the spot. So for the most part, you were close mic'd. And even with the tablas, it was fairly close. Did you use any ambient mics to kind of fill it out?
You know, I'm trying to remember. I don't think... I mean, there was an overhead, so, you know, and I wish I remembered what mics we used.
Because,
I think they're Neumann.
Because, like, guitar, for example, pulling the mic back, like, about 3 feet, you get a different...
Yeah.
It breathes.
Yeah.
Is that the same thing with this instrument?
Yeah, typically, you for a recording session, you do an overhead mic of some sort to get that the overall tone. Not necessarily live, you know, but... But that was part of it, and I just can't remember exactly the setup. But there was four mics involved, two for me, two for tablas. And
it's interesting you're facing each other because it kind of, if you're using unidirectional, you're basically, it's a natural isolation, and then you're using the overhead to get the overall sound, so it gives you some separation.
Yeah. Yeah, and I recorded... film music with Indian music and film, where we had to try to baffle and separate those tracks as much as we possibly could. But it's impossible to just bleed through because I wanted to, you know, layer those and then use those and match that with the orchestra and, you know. But when it was this kind of recording, you're really just going for the overall ambience. And, you know, we're not going to try to do anything in the editing room, which needs track separation and that.
But when you were doing the soundtrack stuff, they wouldn't overdub you?
We just, you know, again, we had the Indian raga. We tried to get the best take we could. There was bleed through. There's nothing we could do about it.
But they preferred to have you play with the orchestra there.
Well, the orchestra was a separate thing. What I did on that recording was those sessions, actually. There was a whole series of recordings. I actually recorded everything in India, and I had everything kind of set in my mind of what types of recordings to get. And then I took them to London and then worked with a composer. And then we went in and got an orchestra, and then, you know, or the record company got an orchestra, and then they played what we wrote. And then we put that together. They were playing and listening to what the Indian music was, but they were playing scores. So
you had the isolate. You were separate. There was enough separation.
Yeah, the orchestration, you know, that was
but
totally
But you never
separate.
Have done it one with the orchestra live where you played with the orchestra?
You know, I haven't done that for recording. I'm trying to think. Maybe I have. I think I have played with an orchestra. With tabla, I think we've done some of that as well, but for a totally different purpose,
right?
You know,
because this instrument cuts. I mean, it's pretty powerful.
It is, but then an orchestra is pretty powerful too. So you have to, you know, there's a lot of things there. But we've done some interesting. Yeah, I've done a lot of film. I did some work with in Chennai as well on a different project in a big studio in India, and we were doing all kinds of different things, and then back here. But it's tricky. It's different with Indian music because the ambience is so important, and there are all these strings ringing, these sympathetic tones that, you know, you don't want to lose that. You can't lose that. That's the whole point, is to have that kind of ambient ring to everything. So it's hard to isolate.
Right.
You know.
Well, the name of we're out of time. I told you we'd go by.
Yeah,
that
really went by.
It's One Heart Highway. Here's a picture of it again. Also, too, if you want to find out more about this, it's stephendavemusic.com is where to go to find out more. And where are you playing? What's coming up? What gigs are happening for you?
Well, right now, I'm just getting everything up onto iTunes and Spotify and all that stuff. And a little, for those of you purists who really want the full versions, you want to go to my website and get the actual CD or, you know, tracks, digital tracks. Stephen Day, is it spelled Stephen Day, music.com. And there's another Stephen Day out there, so don't get confused. He's a songwriter. But the real thing is on Spotify and even iTunes Music, you know, I don't give the full versions, and it's conscious. Basically, what you're going to get there is just like a sample, a good sample, real good sample. But, you know, the full versions are for my fans and for the people who really want the full experience. I just believe I'm kind of going back to classic rock with the whole album. You listen to the whole album in one time. And, you know, remember those Jimi Hendrix solos and Led Zeppelin pieces that would go for 30 minutes live. So it's that vibe that Indian music is also really part of that full experience. And I also believe in high-quality sounds. So, you know, I encourage you to go listen on Spotify and iTunes and all that stuff, which people do, and share the playlist and all that. But then, you know, come on over to the website and get the real deal and the full 37-minute experience with the meditation, as opposed to the, you know, the shorter samples, which, you know.
Yeah, you need to really, if you listen to the full pieces, they're long, but it's important because you see the development and that progression from the beginning of the piece to the end is really important. Anyway, I want to thank you for coming on the show. It's a real pleasure. And what I want to do now is I'm going to play the last part of the Rag Malkhans. Yeah. So you're going to hear this. I think it starts in the third section and goes into the fourth, because at the very end it starts really going.
Yeah, that's the jala.
Start kicking in. So everybody have a great week. We'll see you next week. And enjoy this. This is very interesting stuff. That I love this instrument. It's a whole different world coming from Western music. Like even singing that knee, I started resolving. I kept pushing up to finish the octave. I'm so used to. Sorry, it's my Western upbringing.
Thank you for joining. You know, that was cool.
So anyway, this is the Raga Malkhans.
It's a late night raga, by the way. For those of you, just last point, these ragas on this CD are late night ragas. So best listened to in the later night, maybe midnight, say.
Okay.
You can listen to them anytime.
So you on the West Coast are perfect timing. Yeah, the East Coast are perfect timing. Everybody have a great week. We will see you next week. And here is this last part.